Good morning, folks. This is Lenny Lawson, the car guru, and today is garbage day, Thursday, garbage day in Greenville, Tennessee. Well, it's, you know, on our route, it's garbage day. That means I have to get the massive green container 2,000 feet from my house to the road. Well, I've solved that problem. I thought I had it solved. I thought I had my wife talked into doing it, but nope. So it's on me, and so I use the 1962 Corvair truck. It's really not called a Corvair truck. It's called a Corvair 90, often referred to lovingly as the ramp side. Have you seen one? It's like got a van body on the front and a truck bed. It's rear engine, like all Corvairs. It was a flop on the market. You know, Corvair came out with a van and the Corvair 90, which was basically a truck. And they developed it in 19, I think it came out in 60, and I think 63 was the last year. It just didn't sell. And I can understand why. It doesn't have a flat bed, but it does have a ramp that folds down on the side, which is perfect for loading a big green garbage can. So if you need something like that, I don't know where you're going to find it. You might find another ramp side somewhere, but is it worth spending $25,000 just to be able to take the garbage to the road? Of course, you may have a short driveway too, but it is nice. I used to use my tractor. I have this big Kubota, 52-horsepower Kubota tractor, and I would just use my front loader and pull the garbage can over and then put it in the front loader. The problem is if you hit a serious bump on the driveway, which I have several, the garbage can has a tendency to fall out of the front loader, spilling garbage everywhere. So that happened one time, and I said, okay, that's not working. I tried strapping it to my zero-turn lawnmower. Try holding a garbage can with one hand and doing a zero-turn with the other hand. You know, those things, you're supposed to be two hands, not one. So I put my hand kind of in the middle and kind of rocked my wrist back and forth, and I was just all over the place and dropped the garbage can that time too. So anyway, you won't learn from me great ways to take the garbage to the road unless you buy a rampside pickup truck. So there you go. All right, so what's going on in the industry? I just got my Panorama magazine. Does that sound like a magazine that would come from a car company? It comes from Porsche. It's the official magazine of the Porsche Club of America. And since I do own a Porsche, as some people call them, that is incorrect, by the way. You're supposed to say Porsche. And so if you're in a conversation with somebody and they say, yeah, I was looking at a new Porsche, then they probably weren't. You got to learn how to say it first. It's not like Citroen. You ever heard of Citroen? Well, I thought it was Citroen. And some people would say Citroen, but the way it was spelled didn't jive with that. So, but Citroen is the proper way to say that. Some people used to say Renault. Do you remember those when they were sold in the U.S.? It's actually Renault. Apparently, the French don't like to pronounce consonants at the end of words. A lot of our words are French. And a lot of our words are like that. I'm trying to think of another one, and I just can't. Oh, yeah. Chevrolet. How about that? Shouldn't Chevrolet the last three letters be L-A-Y? No. It's L-E-T. That's those French. Okay, so Panorama magazine. New vehicle fuel economy requirements were released by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration on April 1st. And they're going to require manufacturers to achieve an average of 40 miles per gallon by 2026. Now, several years ago, at the last Democratic, I guess when the last president was a Democrat, which would have been Obama, right? They had set at 2025, the mileage per gallon was supposed to be at 52.5. Well, they knew they would never get there. And so they have revised it now. Trump brought it down to, I think, where it is now, at about 28 miles per gallon. But the new administration has said, okay, we're going to jack it back up there. We're going to give you till 2026 to get 40 miles per gallon average. So what happens if they don't? Well, they pay fines. They pay money to the government. Now, if all of these EVs come on stream like they're saying they're going to, then that should not be a problem. Just probably if Ford is successful with the F-150 Lightning. That's the all-new electric F-150 that's currently being built in Dearborn, Michigan, but will soon, well, as soon as they get the plant built out in West Tennessee, they'll be building them out there. That'll be cool to buy a F-150 built in Tennessee. But when if they basically build or sell 250,000 a year like they're saying they're going to, then that will make a big dent in that number, at least for the Ford Motor Company. But it looks like everybody's coming online with a lot of electric vehicles. One thing that could hold that up, though, is the unfortunate situation in China right now. COVID-19 cases are at a two-year high. So that has triggered quarantines and plant closures in manufacturing hubs. And it strands a lot of microchips, which we need them right now to finish cars. I know Ford has a lot of vehicles still sitting in parking lots that they're waiting on chips for. According to analysts, the shortage of raw materials will cause EV prices to increase sharply. As if everything else wasn't going up enough, now you're going to have to pay $8,000 more for a Tesla Model Y and $11,000 more for the Mercedes EQS. That is their new electric vehicle. So I know that's just what you wanted to hear. And then finally in the news, Ford told us that sales deliveries will be lighter through the end of May. So we're going to get fewer cars from Ford than we have been, which has been basically Zippo. No, we're getting some. They're trickling in. Some of our sold orders are finally being fulfilled. Ford has cut about 100,000 vehicles from production schedules due to parts shortages from 37 different suppliers. So it's not just chips, folks. Ford's U.S. retail sales were down 21% in February, 11% for the year to date due to shortages, which include parts, hard parts, not just, like I say, not computer chips. At Ford, the chip shortage is affecting the luxury features such as rear seat HVAC controls, as Explorers are now being delivered without this feature, which can be added later by the dealer. Now, F-150s are being delivered without automatic start-stop as well. That's fine with me. I don't like that feature. That feature irritates me, as a matter of fact. I turn it off most of the time. So that's where you pull up to a traffic light and your engine shuts off. Then as soon as you lift your foot off the brake and before you put it on the gas pedal, it starts back up again. And you can feel it. That's something that I'm not a big fan of. So anyway, that's what's going on in the industry. Just a minor little glitch here and there, but we'll survive it, right? Okay, we'll be back in just a minute. Okay, I am back. You know, I'm looking out my office window right now. I'm looking at a 1988 Toyota Land Cruiser. It's officially designated as an FJ62. Okay. When it was brand new, what do you think it sold for? Yes, that's pretty close. $20,000 is what this 1988 Land Cruiser sold for in 1988. Now, it has power windows, power door locks, cruise control, an AM/FM stereo, power mirrors. It's white. It has did have chintzy cloth seats. Now it's been upgraded to vinyl, yeah. And so anyway, they were pretty popular back then. What's it worth now? Well, this particular vehicle is something they call a resto mod. I paid $94,000 for this vehicle at the Gooding auction. Yes, I am crazy. But I'm hoping that it will bring in the low 100s when I put it on sale on Bring a Trailer. Don't anybody throw me under the bus and tell somebody what I paid for it. You know, I do want to make money, even though I did have to pay a 5%. I had to pay a 10% buyer's fee. So I've got more in it than 94,000. Between 100 and 110, somewhere in there. So why would I do that? Well, if it was just a normal Land Cruiser with the normal engine and you know, not really restored, something with 190,000 miles on it, it would probably still be worth about they're bringing in the $40,000 to $50,000 range, believe it or not. But this is something called a resto mod. Now, let me explain what that would be. You know how, have you ever driven a 1957 Chevrolet, you know, the one with the tail fins, or 55, or any of those mid-50s cars? Well, you know, they have decent power. You know, most of those cars had small block V8 engines in them, even Ford back then. But they steer terribly. I mean, they've got these big old steering wheels, and, you know, a lot of them are manual transmissions, and they're on the column shifter, or as we say, three on the tree. There's a three-speed. You know, the gear spacing is odd. They're not meant for really brisk acceleration. Some of them had automatics, but they were a power glide automatic, which is just basically a two-speed automatic. Now we're selling vehicles with 10 speeds, like my F-150 that I have out here. But they were crude. You know, they didn't stop well either. I mean, they had drum brakes in the front and rear, and those would overheat and they would fade, and especially if you're driving through the mountains or something like that, it was somewhat dangerous at times. Big old heavy vehicle, weighs too much. So what do you do about that? If you want to drive a 57 Chevy, would you want to restore it back to the way it was and put crappy brakes on it and you know, funky steering and no air conditioning and three on the tree? No. A lot of people don't want to do that anymore. That has become passé. So what people are doing now is putting, basically stripping out all of the drivetrain, the braking system, maybe even the axles, maybe even the frame, pulling the body off the frame, building a totally new modern frame for that vehicle, putting on, you know, four-wheel disc brakes, putting in air conditioning, a modern engine with fuel injection, better cooling system, modern air conditioning, modern steering. So you've got basically a 57 body on a 2020 components, a frame, engine, all of that is brand new. Now, doesn't that sound more pleasurable to drive? Of course it does. And so it also increases the value dramatically. Because if you had gone to the car show in Greenville last weekend and just walked around and looked at all these old cars, I'd say less than 50% of the old cars there had the original engines in them. Most of them had been upgraded with fuel injection and all kinds of goodies. With Ford, it's called a one of the popular engines that we have is called the Coyote V8, which is basically a 5-liter V8 with fuel injection. It's all aluminum, multi-valve engine, 4 valves per cylinder. It's normally mated to a 6-speed or a 10-speed automatic transmission. And what they do is they call them a Coyote swap. So they'll take a Ford Bronco, like a 1970 Bronco like I have, and pull out the 302 V8 with the carburetor and all that stuff and put in this Coyote engine. And what does that cost? Well, it's about, well, not counting labor, it's about $18,000 to $20,000 for a new one. If you find a used one, you might be able to find a used engine and transmission with low miles for around $12,000, $13,000. And then, you know, you're going to have about $3,000 or $4,000 in labor to do that. With GM lovers, they go for the LS swap. Now, the LS is a generation of engines that Chevrolet has been using in everything from Silverado to Camaros to Corvettes. And these LS engines are GM's version, basically, of the Coyote. And so you'll see, normally you won't see a Ford engine go into a 57 Chevy. That just wouldn't be right. So you'll see if somebody does a swap on a 57 Chevy or even a, you know, a 68, 69 Camaro, a Chevelle, something like that, they will go within the LS V8, which makes sense because your GM people want GM components. But they also want modern components. So getting back to my original observation of this Land Cruiser outside my window, why is it worth so much? Well, it has a LS engine swap. Yeah, it's a Toyota, 88 Toyota Land Cruiser. that I have all the original pictures and stuff of this thing before it was done 11 years ago, but it was completely stripped down, body off the frame. Every nut and bolt was replaced on this vehicle by a company called TLC, Tender Loving Care. No, Toyota Land Cruiser. That's what that stands for. They're in Van Nuys, California. A gentleman from Memphis commissioned this vehicle to be done for him, and it cost him $94,000 just for the actual restoration. So he didn't want the original Toyota engine in it. He wanted something more powerful. So they put an LS engine in it with 360 horsepower, fuel injection, a 6-speed automatic transmission, and I'm telling you, that thing will fly. Not that you want to. It's way more power than that vehicle needs, but it makes it worth a lot more. And that's why Lenny Lawson paid so much money for it. It's because it has that big honking engine in it. Now, when you look at it, you would never tell, because it looks like a slightly lifted 88 Toyota Land Cruiser. It's slick as it can be. I mean, like I say, everything is new. Every interior piece of trim, the seats, they even put new foam in the seats. You raise it up on a lift and it looks all brand new on the underside as well. So I'm hopeful that this is going to perform like most resto mods do. Now, there are purists out there. I can be a purist. It's just like I have in my service drive right now is that 66 Mustang K-Code that I have. Now, that car was restored back to its original spec, all original components. They tried to make it look like it just rolled off the factory assembly line with all the inspection stamps and all that kind of stuff. That's a different kind of objective. You know, the objective there, and that car doesn't drive that great. I mean, it's okay, but it's 66 technology. It doesn't drive that good. It's steering's no power steering, no air conditioning. You know, the clutch is heavy. It's just got a lot of, you know, but it's original. And that's what a certain group of people want to see. So obviously the objective was to win a show. That's the only thing I can figure is why somebody would go to such extreme measures to make something original. And you see that a lot when you go to the Amelia Island Concours, to a really big car show where they're judging for originality, then that's what you want to do. But that's not the trend right now. The trend is far more going into the resto mod world. So if you have an old car, now, folks, it's got to be something sporty or an SUV, you know, something older like a K5 Blazer or an old Bronco or something like that. You know, don't try to resto mod your grandmother's 92 Impala, okay, because there's just no desire for that when you're done. Now, I'm not saying you can't do it. You can do it. You can do whatever you want to. You know, we're seeing a lot of people do old Lincolns now. Like Lincoln's from the 60s. I like the 62 Lincoln convertible. You know, it's got the suicide doors, and I hate they call them suicide doors, but that's what they call them. And it's just very blocky looking. You know, the sides are straight, just straight lines and everything. I love that body style. But what people are doing is buying those, getting rid of the Ford engine that came in it, and replacing it with a Coyote V8 or maybe even the Godzilla. That's the new Ford engine that everybody's so fired up about. I think it's 7.3 liters. The Coyote is 5 liters, so considerably larger, higher horsepower. And it just, you know, Godzilla sounds a lot tougher than a Coyote. So anyway, that is a very popular conversion engine right now for Ford. Plus, believe it or not, the engine is more compact than the Coyote V8, even though the displacement is much larger. So that's going to be the next trend. So if you need advice on this kind of stuff, you need some help deciding whether to do a conversion, do a regular restoration, going back original, or doing something in a resto mod world, I either can give you the answers, or I know the people who even have deeper knowledge than I do about those kind of things and what it would cost. Matter of fact, I rent space to a guy who is one of the premier hot rod builders and resto mod converters in this area. His name's Ricky Parton at Parton's Hot Rods in Greenville, Tennessee. 3305 East Andrew Johnson Highway, just after you passed Walmart on the right. So look for it. It says Gateway on the front. I usually have one word of advice for people who want to buy an old car and restore it. And that advice is don't. Yep. You know, it just takes so much more time than you think it's going to. And if you think you're going to do it yourself, you probably won't. That's been my experience. You can't imagine how many cars I've bought from people who say, you know, I always planned on fixing this thing up. I bought it and it just sat in my garage and became a fixture of their garage. If you want to buy a car, buy one that's already restored. It's kind of like, you know, the old saying about golf courses. The people who build the golf courses are always the ones who go bankrupt. And then it's the second owner who buys it out of bankruptcy. They're the ones that make money. It's kind of a skewed analogy there, but the point is, let somebody else do the work. You enjoy all the fun. Now, some of you may say, well, restoring it is the fun, you know, doing it with my grandson or something like that. In that case, by all means, go ahead. Just understand that if you're going to pay somebody else to do it, you're in for a long wait because the backlog just about everywhere is deep. And, you know, it takes time. And then the processes, that all the different parts that you have to order for these vehicles, I'm held up on several parts on my 65 Mustang convertible that I'm restoring, just sitting around waiting for the interior to come in. I mean, I've got some of it, but the parts that I need right now can't get. So, you know, just think about it. Put some deep thought into it before you do it. Really try to envision how you're going to use it. Are you really going to go to car shows? You know, is that your thing? Do you buy a car and, you know, go sit some lawn chairs in front of it and say hi to people and sit out there in the hot sun? That may be fun for some of you, but others of you may say, no, I'd rather play golf. I'd rather go on vacation, stay in a hotel. It's like people who buy campers and never use them. You know, they're hotel people and they say, well, let's just get us a camper. And then they go twice and realize that that's not what they want to do. Just put some thought into it. If you need any advice, give me a call. Lenny Lawson, 423-552-2020. I'll talk to you tomorrow.